You're listening to SBS News.
In February last year, experts thought the COVID-19 recovery process took 2 weeks at most. A year later, however, data shows 1 in 10 patients continue to experience poor health for months after they first become infected, naming the phenomenon long COVID. Now, researchers in the United Kingdom are using multiple organ MRI scans to diagnose the internal damage done by long COVID to patients. Rajashi Banerjee, internal medicine specialist and CEO of Perspectum, a medical innovations company based in Oxford, says it's coming up in patients who weren't even very sick to begin with.
A decent number of people who've had COVID, not necessarily severe in the acute phase, go on to develop multi-system inflammation affecting a variety of organs. These patients are severely debilitated and can suffer from fatigue, brain fog, heart disease, and lung disease.
Gerda Baylis was infected with COVID-19 during the first wave of the virus in March 2020, but the effects live with her to this day.
I get like sharp pains and radiating pains on this side and all down my shoulder. Sometimes I like lose sensation in especially my left arm. I get pains in my arm and I especially if I kind of walk for a bit longer than normal, it'll go cold and it'll go numb. Also, I mean, whether this is related or not to the myocarditis, but my legs start to drag, so I can only walk for a certain amount of time before my legs drag. I get like kind of quite acute headaches which come and go.
Ms. Baylis is now part of Perspectum's study CoverScan, a trial where researchers are examining MRI scans to identify how the virus does long-term damage to our internal organs, not just the lungs as suspected, but the heart and other organs as well. Andrea Dennis, head of translational sciences at Perspectum, explains.
We've been taking the numbers that we get from the images and we've been looking at how they would normally fit in a healthy person and how they would look like in an unhealthy person. That gives us a way of interpreting the value to know whether or not what we're seeing on an individual level is a cause for concern or not. The two sort of main features that we're looking at quantifying are the amount of fat inside the organ and the amount of inflammation inside the organ. So we now have a good understanding of what numerical value would represent healthy versus unhealthy, and then we could hopefully then direct the individual patient to the right specialist based on what we see on the images.
Despite the growing number of patients claiming to suffer from long COVID, the world is far from opening any kind of specific treatment clinic. It's only just been defined, and there's yet to be consensus over the symptoms and how many people suffer from it, with some studies estimating the number could be about 30% of COVID adult patients. As the debate continues, Ms. Baylis finds herself increasingly frustrated.
Very frightening, and you know, all tests coming back normal when I knew that what I was experiencing wasn't normal. But as it's gone on and as it's been more in the media, and maybe as more kind of doctors and frontline workers have been getting long COVID as well, gradually become a little bit more understanding about it.
Mr. Banerjee thinks countries are slowly waking up to the concern, saying the National Institute of Health in the United States has allocated $500 million of funding to be led by Massachusetts General Hospital and New York University. However, in developing nations, the focus is still on immediate prevention and vaccination. Vaccine inequality and the progress of the COVAX vaccine sharing initiative came under huge scrutiny during the recent United Nations General Assembly. Singapore is just one of the highly vaccinated countries to repledge their support to distribution over the weekend, with Foreign Minister Vivian Balakrishnan saying global solidarity is needed.
First, the fight against COVID-19 is far from over. Access to vaccines remains the biggest problem faced by many countries. Our immediate priority must be to redouble efforts to expand access to vaccines by scaling up production and distribution. Singapore is a strong supporter of vaccine multilateralism. We will continue to support the COVAX facility, and Singapore will donate our vaccines under the COVAX initiative to other countries with greater needs.
Thailand's Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha backed these calls.
The COVID-19 pandemic is living proof that nobody is safe until everybody is safe. In this regard, I urge that vaccines and medicines be considered as global public goods, which can be accessible to all in an equitable and rapid manner. Any country that has surplus COVID-19 vaccines and medicines in hand is encouraged to share them with those in need, either through donations or swap arrangements.
French President Emmanuel Macron has also pledged to double the number of vaccine doses it will send to poorer countries to 120 million. Meanwhile, a different approach to coronavirus management is taking place in Norway. The government ended social distancing measures over the weekend, with hospitality entertainment venues back to full capacity and functioning. With some 76% of all Norwegians having received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine and 67% of the population fully vaccinated, authorities say living COVID safe will now be up to citizens. Positive cases will still have to isolate. However, onus is now on the individual to choose what risk they want to take and what measures they want to practice. Neither vaccination status certificates nor test results are required to enter such venues in Norway. The Nordic nation joins a small but growing number of countries, including Denmark and Britain, which have removed all domestic restrictions that limit the spread of COVID-19. Sofia Petrovic, SBS News.